And what we want to do this section is more or less to give you some idea of how to proceed in a parish, like, you know, to start this whole idea of a stewardship way of life. And I relate again from experiences, you know, over the years that we have had and what success we have had with it. And one of the things I think that maybe we need to understand that before it really works in a parish, I think there's three very important things that a parish needs to be before it really takes off in a parish. First and foremost, I think a parish needs to be a prayerful place. That prayer is very important. And I think in this day and age, you know, we have all matters, types, and forms of prayer. And I think we as pastors need to really allow the people this idea as long as it all agrees with the church. You know, we can't really oppose anything that the church approves of. Some of us have hang-ups about different types of prayer and whatnot. But I think as long as the church approves of it, I think we need to be supportive of it. And so often we have a habit of staying away from something just because we don't personally like it, whereas some other groups will be involved. And, you know, we have several groups of prayer from charismatics to back to the people just on the rosary, things like that. But we encourage them all, and we have a lot of Bible study groups that are going to. But I think the pastor or priest there have to be very cognizant of all these things in order to make sure that they are not straying away. Because I know in our area, there's several Bible study groups and other denominations. One of the groups that one of the Bible study groups that we have, like Follow the Little Rock series, I'm sure many are familiar with that. It is very well done. But then we also have another series that one of the priests in our own diocese, a biblical scholar, has drawn up. So we follow that in other areas. It's a little different from the Little Rock, but it's still basically the same. And the question always comes up with regard to masses and things like that and the number of masses. And, of course, this is always realizing that today that the church, particularly the Pope, has come out very strong in them with regard to just having masses that are needed in parishes and not the surplus of masses. But I think the convenience of the masses in the parish, I think, is very important. Like we had the people vote on the time that we have them. Like we have two masses on Saturday night. Our church seats 1,200. And we have five on Sunday morning, beginning at 7 and then every hour and a half. And we have three of our masses, like 5 and 10 and 11:30, where it's just standing room only. We average between 6,500 and 7,000 people there on a Sunday morning for mass. So it really keeps you occupied. It keeps you going. And then during the week, we have two masses, one in the morning, 8 o'clock, and one at 5:30 in the evening. And see, we have over 300 people that'll come to daily mass. Adults, this is adults. We're also blessed with regard to a number of our young people that come to mass, college age and high school age. And one of the requirements that we have now for kids going to high school is that they do have to sign a form that they're going to attend mass on Sunday. Our high schools are full. So the big question has come up, should we add on to them? And the problem is that several of our parents who send their kids to the high school do not go to mass themselves, and neither do the kids. So the priests have decided, well, this is pointless, because the parishes are paying for this education. So let's weed out these particular people, let them go to the public school or to the other private school. So this is what we're trying. So each child then that goes to high school has a certain form to fill out that they're going to be part of a stewardship way of life, and one of the requirements is that they go to mass on Sundays. Because I tell our parents in school that at the beginning of the year, I have a meeting with all the parents all together, and I tell them that we don't want their kids if the parents are not going to go to church, because all we're doing is confusing the kids. They're told in school to go to mass, and then you're not going. So make that decision now. Yourself, whatever you want to do, right? And most of them, of course, will make an effort to get to mass, like you see, and I think it's really increased a lot of it. And one of the little tricks we have used, like you see, over the years, is we have a celebration for first penance for the kids, whereby we invite the whole family. parents and brothers and sisters and everything else like that. It's amazing what those little kids can do to parents, you know. They can get them out. And it's surprising the number of parents, like, you know, that will be coming back to the sacraments through that way. So one of the things that's necessary besides the prayer is service. So the parish needs to give service. The Lully Foundation recently have produced a report which contradicts quite a bit of what the report that came out here a few years ago that was authored by Andrew Greeley and Bishop McManus with regard to why do Catholics not go to church anymore, why they have fallen away. You may remember in that particular report, there was tremendous emphasis on the doctrine of the church, on birth control and abortion, various things like this. This is the reason they explain why Catholics don't go to church on Sunday. Now, the Lully Foundation has funded a new report, which was headed by a Presbyterian from Catholic U there. What is it, Dr. Hoagie or Dr. Hoag? Hodge, or, yeah. Okay, headed by him. And it completely contradicts that altogether. Their number one priority why Catholics don't go to church on Sunday is they don't get service, which is sort of interesting, that they don't feel that their needs are being served at church. And I think this is very important for us because, for example, like we have confessions like 5 days or 6 days a week. We have confessions before the evening Mass every day. And as often as not, like two, they're out there for 30 minutes. As often as not, there's two priests here in confessions because of the number of confessions. We also have them on Saturdays, and we don't have any confessions on Sundays, the only day we don't have them. And so there's a large number of people who still go to confession if they get that opportunity. As I travel throughout the country, like I find sometimes that the habit of having confessions at 3 o'clock and it's until there's nobody left, like, doesn't work. You got to give period, sort of a period of time for them to come. Because if the person can't make it at 3 o'clock, then the priest is gone. But I think this is all just part of our service, like, that we really need to be there for people. In the same way, like, we visit the hospitals, even though they do have chaplains, but we visit the hospital, like, 3 times a week. What to do? There's 3 priests. So it's only once a week that each one of us goes there. And I've had a habit, like for the last 30 years, for example, of going to funeral homes with people on the occasion of a death. It's amazing how those people really appreciate that fact. Because we as priests are used with regard to funeral homes, and for some people, they have never been in one. They're not experiencing it. You can arrange a funeral very conveniently then with regard to times as well as helping them at the funeral home. The one thing I try to look for is that they're not going to be emotionally too much involved, that they're going to put themselves into debt too much. They're to know what they can spend and get by with, because some people put an awful lot of money down a 6-foot hole that nobody ever sees or nobody realizes about, you know. And so we try to protect them from that, knowing that they don't have very much resources. And what started me was the fact that I remember a couple, really, that they had buried their father, and it cost them at that particular time somewhere around $5,000, and they were paying for it for 4 years. And that, I think, was pathetic, like, you know, those things happen. So we try to give them that particular type of service. And the third thing I think is very necessary is hospitality. Now, all of us are generally pretty good at it, but we use what we call hosts and hostesses at every Mass on weekends. They're out in the vestibule. They have signs on who they are. And they welcome people to the church. They're available after Mass then to answer any questions at all that they may have. We also have a welcoming committee that visits all new families. And then once a month, they also have a gathering of the new families. And that particular phase of it is really not working as well as we'd like it to work. It's difficult sometimes to get them come together. But what we like them to come is we generally will have somebody there from our pastoral council explaining the different facets of the pastoral council to them. But it's difficult to get them to come to that. But they are very welcome. The people are welcome to their home. They generally make appointments with them. They're sort of like welcome wagon. They bring them a little welcoming basket. And in that basket, like they say, they will have a book which we have, Welcome to Your Family. It tells us about the history of the parish, as well as the principles of the stewardship idea that we have in the parish, that we are a stewardship parish, and how things work. And then in the back of the book, there's a complete listing of all the different organizations that we have going in the parish, and a separate sheet that is changed every so often with all the leaders of those groups and their telephone number there, so that anybody can become part of it at whatever time they come into the parish. So that they can really call up the head of that particular group and say, well, I would like to be part of that right now. So it gives them the opportunity of doing that. So this is the welcoming group. And then I have another welcoming group, and their particular role is welcoming new converts. I don't know how many converts that you have in the year, like, but we'll average between 50 and 60 converts a year in the parish. And so this group will stay with the converts, like you see, for a period of a year. And they will have meetings about four times a year or so with them, giving them an opportunity to ask questions. And particularly, I take a mass, particular mass with them, because that's where some of them have difficulties with regard to understanding the whole Mass and the sequence of the Mass, as well as what it really means. Then after the Mass in, we will have a meeting whereby they can ask questions right away, of coffee and cookies at this particular time. So these are types of things, I think, like whereby people realize that the priests are available, that the priests are there in order to build up that community. So if you have those three elements, then what I done at the very beginning, I did not have any particular committee in order to help with the stewardship idea, because we didn't have all that many volunteers. But then after about 5 years, whenever the thing really started to mushroom, I called a group of people together, and six couples actually. I like to deal with couples. I don't know, we have places for singles too in the group, because we have a number of singles. But mainly, I like to get husbands and wives together. And they were the ones that we started with in order to really help organize our stewardship appeal, which comes in November of each year. Now, the appeal is diocesan-wide for the last 10 years. So the diocesan paper and all like that covers all of that thing. So, but to get back to the stewardship committee, the people that I choose, right, you see, were people, the six couples were daily mass attendants. But they were also pretty successful in the work that they were doing in life. So they were sort of leaders in the community. And this is the type of person that I think we need to look for is Eucharistic people. People to whom church is very important to, because then they will do anything for Christ. I recommend that pastors select those people rather than elect them or anything like that. That they should select them, because you need positive people that are really and truly are going to really help along the line. We spent about 3 months with those people, just mainly dealing with scripture and with regard to the whole stewardship concept, because we didn't have any other source at that time. Now, the bishop's pastoral is an excellent source for training stewardship people, because it's set up in such a way, as we'll see this evening, that at the end of each section, there's questions there to be discussed. And it's also, of course, set up in Spanish as well. So it's a very important document for people to study. And it's quite helpful. And for any of you who are familiar with Father Frank Novak, I think he's in Chicago at the moment, but he came out with a program called Total Stewardship many years ago. It didn't go over very well. He sent me copies of it originally, and I told him it wouldn't go over too well. But the whole idea was, he used to be the head of the National Stewardship group for the United States. And one of the things that sort of annoyed him to an extent, that the reason why he left it was because their whole emphasis was on money. He felt like, you know, he had heard me talk at various places with regard to the time and talent portion. But Frank came up with an idea. But the reason why it doesn't work, in my opinion, now again, I may be all wrong, is because he has 16 weeks on time, and he has 16 weeks on talent, and he has 16 weeks on treasure. And whenever you add that all up together, that's a long time to be dealing with one particular subject, the parish. Now, he does have a little book that goes along with it to prepare people for this. And that's an excellent book for study. It's a short little book which is called Matrix. But it's an excellent little book if you're starting out training people in the stewardship way of life. Frank is a redemptor. As far as I know, he's stationed in Chicago at the moment. But this 16 weeks was what I thought was really a little too much to put on in various areas. But he felt that this was necessary. So he set up an organization whereby he would send out somebody to work in parishes like for a year and a half. A little expensive because of that. I felt that the people could do it. So after the training of these particular people, what they do then is that they are the people then who do the mailing. We mail to everyone in the parish. We have a package that we mail to them. We send them out a form whereby they can sign up for an individual apostolate, something they can do on their own, that they can sign up for a group apostolate, something that they work with others. They also get a card for treasure. Now, we also have cards for the youth, the high school students. We also have ones for kindergarten through sixth grade. Youth we call 7 through 12. In other words, we get them started early. So we have these. Now, the one for the little kids, we also have envelopes for them. And on the envelopes, on the outside of the kids' envelopes, is time, talent, and treasure. Now, there's very rarely any treasure ever in those. But there's these little things that the kids write on there of what they did for mom or dad during the week. They cleaned their room. They went to the store or something else like that. That's just written in there like, you know, something that they did. I got a suggestion here some time ago from one of the mothers, said we should save those and give them to them the day they get married. I don't know. It'd be quite a job to do that because we have quite a few of them on there. But and then whenever all these come back in again, they're all mailed to the people with a letter from the pastor, a very positive letter, inviting them to become part of the stewardship way of life. Nothing negative in there at all, and we don't have any follow-up for the people that don't respond. We don't worry about that at all. We just encourage them to bring them back to church. We have boxes at the entrance to the church and during the offertory. The ushers put them all into one box and bring them up to the altar. And then we offer a prayer. These people's offering for the year, what they're going to do for God. This is how we basically renew. I tried getting the people always to come up to the altar with their individual one, but that didn't work too well. It's very nice in some areas do it. Right? But I have found that if you place the boxes at the back of the church and then have the ushers put it together then, and at the offertory time they bring it up. That particular time, then we offer a prayer for them, that this works quite a little bit better. Then whenever all of these come back in again, they have to be sorted out. Our forms are all set up for a computer. So they're all put on the computer and then all sorted out. And this is where the stewardship committee too does all of that work. And then they pass it along to the various groups in the parish of what these people volunteered for. So it's really quite a process. But it's really something I think is very important. Now, one of the most important things that you realize with regard to volunteers is that you let them know that you appreciate their volunteering. And If possible, use them. That's very important. Now, you'll have people volunteering for things whereby there's no way in God's earth you can use them all, and they understand that. For example, like, we have people that will volunteer to work or to give food on the occasion of a funeral. Like, we provide a free meal to families at the, after a funeral. Now, we have a list of about 400 to 500 people on that, and we don't have all that many funerals. So some of them are not contacted. But every one of those people that volunteered got a card from the head of the funeral committee thanking them for volunteering. The parish pays for the postage. They draw up a card. So they're all thanked by mail and all these things so that the people know then that they're appreciated. Because that's one of the drawbacks, really, to using a lot of the people's time and talent is that they say, well, I volunteered last year and nobody ever contacted me. So it's important that you use them, and important to have things for them to do. Right? And there's generally lots of things for them to do. If you really get them, like, we have no problem at all getting a group of people to come in to mail all, help mail all different things. Because these people have volunteered as secretaries. You know, secretaries can stuff envelopes and put on stamps and everything else like that. We'll have about 40 to 50 people will come in, men and women, some of whom are retired, come in there and get a mailing ready like in about 4 hours. And all we have to do is just announce it. We don't have, nobody has to do any calling at all. So it's amazing the change that comes about in a parish with the stewardship way of life. The positiveness of people. That's what I've noticed over the years, is that the parish then belongs to them. This is their parish, and they're proud of what they're doing. They're doing it for God. They're not doing it for the pastor. They're not doing it for anything else. But they're doing things for God. So there's a whole change of attitude that comes about. Remember, this is something that we need very badly today, is a positive attitude. Because there's so much negativism out today that people are afraid to live in their neighborhood because of all that is happening around them. So they need something positive today to really hang on to. The stewardship way of life gives them that because God is always there for us whenever we place our trust in Him. He'll see to it that we can accomplish really what we set out to do. So during this time we also, the mailing and all like that, we have the people praying, and it's in the prayers of the faithful. The people will respond at this particular time to let them. So this goes on throughout the whole diocese. And what's interesting about it is whenever we extended it throughout the diocese, some of the pastors, of course, didn't pay much attention to it to begin with. And, I had requests, as the director of development spreading this, we had requests from various people in parish that said their pastor didn't give them any literature. Could we please mail it to them? Because their brothers or their acquaintances at the other parish got it and we didn't get it. So it's kind of strange. People would not be looking for this type of thing. But this is reality. Once it's spread along. See, our diocese today, like you see, for the last 10 years, is a stewardship diocese. The whole diocese is supported through stewardship. We send in 10% of our monthly income into the diocese, and that takes care of all of the farmer collections, as well as all of the various cathedraticum and all of the other assessments existing. Since that time, our total collection in the diocese has gone from 15.2 million last year to 33.8 million. And we haven't had any change really too much in numbers at all. That's in 10 years. Doubled in 10 years. People's income has not doubled in 10 years. So whenever we introduced it actually into the diocese, the first 2 years we had a tremendous increase of 31%, the 2 year period. Then after that it was at about average of about 5.8%. So the people are very, very generous whenever it was introduced to them. But to get back to the establishing it in a parish, you see, I talk for 2 Sundays. renewal. At the beginning, first of all, it takes stewardship in general and invite the people to become part of it. I deal an awful lot with the scriptures during it. I quote the scriptures to them, realizing that this is Christ's way of spreading the faith of evangelization and calling us really to be his followers. And then I deal with the specific. Then on another Sunday, and the lay people then talk one Sunday. And what they talk about is mainly their experience with regard to their lives and stewardship and what it has done for them. And if you can get people from your parish, they are much more appealing to the people in the parish than bringing in a stranger. There are groups that go around throughout the country speaking on this. And they're very good. But if you can get people that can be identified by the people in the pew, I think they're much more effective. That's been my experience, like with, see, because the people see them. Say, well, I know that person. See, and I know where they live and I know what they work. And if they can do it, I can do it. Whereas you bring in some stranger from outside and they say, well, that's okay for them. They have a whole different way of life and all like that. But if you can identify with the individual, and those people are around every parish. They're around every parish. That really and truly God is very important in their lives. But they don't have to be excellent speakers. You know, lay people are, whenever they hear another lay person talking, they're very appreciative of how they talk. And they don't really worry too much about how they talk, because they can picture themselves up there and say, thank God it's not me. You know, that's what you hear them saying, like, you know. And it's interesting that, like, you know, because we think, oh no, we didn't get anywhere. It always reminds me, you know, of years ago, whenever we used to have second collections, this was back in the early 50s, and I remember having a missionary from India, and you could barely understand the man at all. At that particular time, we got the largest collection we ever got for any missionary that whole year. And I asked some people afterwards, like, you know, did they understand him? And they said, no. We just felt sorry for him, you know. So it's really interesting how people do react to different things, you know. Felt sorry for the poor man. Yeah. So this is the thing with regard to lay people, and they're pretty apprehensive sometimes initially of getting up, like, you know. Now, since the original six, two of them are gone now. One of them is the director of stewardship and development for the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City right now, and another one is the director of stewardship for our own diocese. So since then, I have added on young people, but in young couples. And they're quite interesting, really, you know, because it brings a little different perspective to the people than whenever they're talking to them. These are people like in their late 20s and early 30s. And so it's bringing in a new generation. Because, you know, one of the things that you've probably realized is that this X generation people are a sort of different way of thinking than some of us who have passed that particular period of time. This X generation from 18 to 30 people. They are people, as many of the financial people in the world are beginning to worry about. Because, I don't know, you saw that program on CBS here for a while around a few times about credit cards. But these people average having four credit cards, and they average $3,000 on each credit card. And if they just make the minimum payment each month, it'll take them 27 years to pay it off without using the cards anymore. So they figure they're always going to be in debt. So it's a kind of a frightening thing. But they're the type of people, really, that I don't know if maybe it's the type of world that we live in, that money doesn't seem to make any difference to them, or debt doesn't seem to worry them at all in the least. They figure that, well, the government or somebody will take care of them as time goes along. And I think these people are, they're different type of thinkers. And most of them, like, have moved into homes that, generally speaking, they can't afford. They're spending every dime on their house and everything else like that, you know. And some of them have told me they can't wait until their parents die till they inherit the money so they can spend it too. They're very honest about it, you know. They don't hold back at all. So So I think these are the type of people then that we get these young people to appeal to, that really to bring God into their lives and really get their lives in order. So we put on workshop for these people, like on budgeting and different things like that, to help them along the line. And it's this is all free, like, you know, because we have people in the parish that volunteer their time to do these type of things. And they're glad to do it, because many of these money consultants, you know, later on were liable to be used by these people in order to help them along the line. So there's always an opening for them to get in there, like you say, once they get acquainted with them. And we put on workshops, like you see, for example, with regard to estate planning. They're attended mainly by older people, you know, of how to plan estates and keep the money away from the IRS, like, you know. Because it's amazing the amount of money that goes towards there, that need not go at all, like, whatsoever, if it's properly planned. And these people can do that. But, so they're a big help. So you always provide these helps along the line. But once you get the lay people really talking there and what it means to them, I think personally that that is more of an appeal to the average person, the average parishioner, than anything else. That it really does. Because they see what those people are doing. And we have some marvelous people today. We have a young fellow, for example. Well, he's young. Whenever he started in it, he started 20 years ago. He started his own. For Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut was founded in Wichita by two young Catholic fellows. And so this fellow was the head of the warehouse for Pizza Hut whenever the PepsiCo bought it over. And so he got the franchises for several of the small towns along the East Coast here. And he told me whenever he started that he made a promise to God that if God would help him, the 10%, like you see, of his income would go to God all the time. He's a convert. He was also at daily mass every day. Still is. Now, he started with $35 a week. Right now, he's at $10,000 a month. Now, that's not all he gives to charity. He gives 22% of his income to charity right now. Last year, $260,000. Some people say, well, that's easy for him, the money he makes. Well, I don't know where it is in it. No, but that's the type of an individual he is. But he's at mass every day. Right. So we have numerous people who have started like this. Like whenever he got up to $1,000 a month, one of his buddies, like he was telling me, one of his buddies said, why are you giving so much money to the church? He says, well, he said, I made that promise to God to help me, and God has still helped me. And he says, I don't want God to take away that help. Right. So this is what happens, like, along the line to certain individuals. Now, whenever he talks on Sunday, he and the wife, like the wife, there's a volunteer at Guadalupe Center. She's a nurse. So they are very appealing then to people because people know what they do. Right? So they're talking very honestly, right, about what they do. And they can see them there each and every day at mass. It's very important. So I think we have probably covered most of that whole idea with regard to how to get it going. You know, one of the things, like, you know, that I tell people, too, for example, is that the only reason, you know, that the church has envelopes at all is in order to keep track of it for the IRS. But basically, we don't need to be keeping track of people's income or what they give the church. It's only to give really a report at the end of the year so that they can use it for the IRS. We need that. Otherwise, you couldn't give them a yearly statement if that's what their money was. Any questions now about it? Yeah. Yeah, you could bring them in for somewhere else. Although, whenever I started out in one of the parishes, I had a fellow there that worked for the VA. And he had an interesting story of why I got him to talk to him. He was just so nervous. I wonder if the people are grasping what he's talking about at all, like the assistant director of the VA. And he had just a marvelous story of what his life was, things that happened to him from the time that he began. People accepted it. No, we don't. We're starting to get a number of professional people, but for many years we did not have the professional people. We have a lot of people that work in the aircraft industry. Wichita is the aviation capital of the world. We have a Boeing factory there with 26,000 people. The headquarters of Cessna, the headquarters of Lear, the headquarters of Heath. The aircraft business is really booming at the moment. The Cessna is just opening up a new plant this coming Wednesday to rebuild piston engine. So anybody's in the area for buying one of the private planes again with one engine, Cessna's going to have it. Produced 2,000 years. They haven't made a plane piston engine produced in the last 20 years because of liability insurance. Well, most of our people work in that area. Every year. No. No, because you see, they're making commitment to what they're going to do for a year. And people will make a commitment for a year that they won't do for life. That's right. You just ask them to sign up for a year. Yeah. A pledge of dollars, a pledge of time, and a pledge of talent. Yeah. See, what's interesting about people putting it on paper is, you know, if we put something on paper, the chances are we're going to fulfill it. Whereas if we just make a promise and say, I'm going to do that, we can generally rationalize it away and say, I didn't really intend it that way. We hear that every so often from some individual, you know, that, well, this is too often. We just did it a year ago. You know, I don't need to do it again. Well, it gives them an opportunity maybe to volunteer for something different. Yes. Yeah. I say a little prayer of offering to God. Yes, yeah. They're filed, you see, then they're distributed, like you see, to the finance would be distributed to the finance committee. Where they would keep records on it, and then all the other things that they're volunteering for are sent to that particular committee. Yeah. Yeah. Our parish produced it. Just write to my secretary and she'll take care of you if anybody wants a card. My secretary is much more dependable than I am in remembering things. So just drop her a note, like you say. The name of the book is, this particular book here, is Living Life as God Intended. And it's just written by them. It's written by a stewardship group. By the way, there's little pamphlets, you know, put out by this. I bet I don't know if you're familiar with them. They're very good. People think they're quite simple, they're pretty cheap, things like that, you know, that whenever you're introducing it, you know, the stewardship along the line. Yeah. No, this is a Canon Beatty, put that out. Canon Beatty, yeah. They put out quite a few of these scriptograph types, like on different subjects and whatnot. You get a mailing from them every year, yeah. Here. The card there. The card. So, yeah. Turn on that. Doesn't want to go. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, St. Francis of Assisi. It's not a Franciscan one. Huh? Everybody thinks it's Franciscan because of the name, but Socorro.
Used to be C-O-R-A. Used to be Indian.
Right in the prairie. I spent 3 months with them.
Yeah, they've been called. Restless people.
Daily masters.
Stop. They didn't know what they were getting into. They've told me many times since then that they're glad they got into it.
Purposes, functions, like you see, is really to help in all of the mailings that are sent out to the parishioners, and then they would come back in, like you see, to accumulate this, put it on the computer, sort it out then on the computer, and give it to the various committees, like you see. So work. And they should be, a lot of people I've noticed think that whenever you bring financial people to the meetings in various parts of the diocese, and I think they're forgetting really, you know, finance is just only one part of it. So they need to bring, like, the pastoral council people, you know, and you know, as well as finance people. Because what attracts them to our place was their income. And what they don't realize is that the time and talent is far more stressed than income, and any of our parishioners will tell you that. Right? There's a lot goes on before the finance comes in, you know. But the amount of money that we take in that seems to strike people because they're in need of money. But I've, some parts of the country that I've gone to, they said, like, you know, they like the concept because it's spiritual and all like that. Whenever I tell them it's going to take 2 or 3 years really to get it implemented in the parish, they said, we can't wait that long. My standard answer is, what are you going to do 2 or 3 years from now if you don't start it? And they said, we need the money right now. Like, we have, since I went to the parish, like, one of the needs that came up was the need for a new church. There were about 600 families in the parish when I went there, and I was the fourth pastor in a period of 3 years. The others didn't survive too long. An interesting thing. So I told the bishop I'd tried for 6 months, like, you know. And now 28 years later, I'm still there. Things started to grow and they needed stability and whatnot there. And, one of the decisions we had to make was to either add on to the school or to build a new church. They had no regular church. It was just a temporary church because the parish wasn't all that old. That suburb. So they just voted, we had them vote on that. And they voted for a new church. And we built the church, we finished the church in 77 at a cost of 1.5 million at that time. It says it holds 1,200 people. And they paid for it in 2.5 years. It was a concept church. And then the next thing, the school needed to be expanded, so we put a $3 million addition onto the school. They paid for it in a period of 8 years while adding one classroom a year. Same time. Right. So all of these things are possible, you know, without really a large, shall we say, fundraising going on or anything else like that. People really will respond whenever they see that particular need, and particularly whenever they know where the thing goes. See if I have a copy here of a parish paper that we put out. I'll put in one. Yeah, for example, there's what do we put out in our, every month, a group, there's a special group, just committee that puts this out, called the vernacular. And in the vernacular, we have the financial report for each month. You're given the amount of money that comes in and where it all goes. So the people all know every month. We publish in the bulletin every Sunday how much came in the Sunday before. And then beside it, then whether it's, there's a column that's kept, whether we're above what our budget was or below what our budget was. this past year we're running about 250,000 above our budget. So this is what they do. So this gives them a pretty good idea. Like, this is for the financial report for the month of May. Our ordinary income was 262,000, and our expenses was 224,000. So these big figures, people need to know where that money goes and where it comes from, you know. So that's where we put that out each month. This is a first mass of one of our parishioners. As I went to St. Francis, we have had it. I've had it. Young men ordained to the priesthood. And I have one ordained to the transitional deacon this past year. There's two more in the seminary. We sent 3 years to the convent. The prayer does help. Now, this is handed out at church. Yes. 24 hours, 7 days a week. Yeah, there's lots of possibilities whenever it comes really to church way of life really that people don't realize. And I think, you know, particularly that change of attitude of the people to be positive people. And that I think is quite evident. Like, you know, we find that we have numbers of, or groups of people that come in to visit in the parish and maybe stay 2 or 3 days there or something else like that from different parts of the country. And one of the things I always invite the members of this churchship is to have lunch or dinner with them or something else like that. We will take them out there in the parish, we'll take care of their needs and things like that, to visit with them. And this is one of the things that they have always said. We have a diocesan stewardship day coming up, that comes up every year, like, you know. And ours this year will be September the 26th. It's a Thursday. The reason why it's a Thursday is because that's the only day that we could get to Bishop Bob Morneau from Green Bay. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Bob. He's really a very fascinating speaker. And he's the auxiliary in Green Bay. He's very much imbued with stewardship. He was on the Bishop's Committee. The Bishop's Committee actually was headed by Archbishop Murphy out of Seattle. If you notice in the pastoral, there's a few poems in there, and Bob would be responsible for that. He's our keynote speaker. And we have all the speakers coming in from different parts of the country. The form that we use, yeah. This will get you started. Suddenly. Oh yeah, it'll build that community, you see. Is what it does. It builds a community. And every year of a community, people all go in the same direction, you can accomplish anything. The biggest problem in a lot of parishes is the negativism that exists. And that's one of the things I would like these laymen, please close your ears that are here. But I want to tell you pastors that most parishes are controlled by bitchers. And that's only 5% of your parish. Because they're bitching about what you do, any little change or anything else like that. And many people are denied awful good programs because of these bitches. So you should never pay attention to them at all. Yeah. All it takes is one letter.
Yeah.
Even unsigned. Goodness gracious, yeah. Well, they should do. I don't know whether you are familiar with what happens whenever people report a bishop to Rome or not. The letter is sent back to the bishop with a little card, engraved card across the top of it. Please give this the prayerful consideration that it deserves. That's what your bishop should be doing too. Back to the individual. Send back to the pastor, whoever it is. Give the prayerful consideration. You're not worthy of anything like that, especially an unsigned letter. Oh, yeah. Whenever I went to the parish, I used to get a whole bunch of letters. Imagine that, after the fourth pastor, after a period of 3 years. A lot of unhappy people. Now, I've only got one letter, I just put it aside, left it there. Didn't answer. But if I got two from the same person, then I answered. But I figured a lot of the people just had a grievance. They wanted to let somebody know. And once it was off their mind, it was all over. The problem with continuing is the answering stuff like that is sometimes you're continuing the problem. Just get it off their mind. So, the conflicts can last a long time with some people, especially if they're hurt. Forever's a long time, yeah. Yeah, it's really difficult whenever, you know, that does occur. We used to have a bishop like that many years ago. He would never even talk to the priest that was sitting in about at all. Some of the things were just so outlandish, it's unbelievable. We had a chancellor to sort of balance it up a little bit. Bishop, that's not true. Couldn't be. No. Saying we mentioned, on the clinic, we have the clinic, but we also have a mission in Venezuela, Marco Jimeno, we help. We also have a bishop in the Philippines that we help. Started with Russia, We're one in various parts, but it's a good idea, actually, to involve the people in these things, to really realize, sort out, where they can go. One of the problems that I'm sometimes called into in our own diocese, with parishes that are, very close-knit, and they don't want any money going out at all. Like one of the last ones, I was there about 2 months ago talking to their financial group, The pastor had a surplus of about 100,000 every year, and he wanted to send it off to the foreign missions. No way would they want to go. So I suggested to them, why don't you start with a soup kitchen in town? This is wonderful with them. I thought this was a great idea, So they started putting money into the soup kitchen, as much as the soup kitchen needed. And they discovered they still had a lot of money left over. And then they started to expand. Sometimes you have to start them locally. Start them locally and then they'll get a wider vision of the church. No. Yeah. We do some fundraising, but it's all for outside sources. One of the things that we do fundraising for is MDA. The reason why we do is we had two kids, both have since died here, one of them just this past year, that had MD. And the parents came to me about 11, 12 years ago, and said they would like us for to do something nicely. So we just use our people. So we have an auction. Goods, they raise about 25,000 to 30,000 a year on the auction. All we do is provide the building, provide the people to work it, and then the money all goes there. We don't keep any of it at all. See, that is all part of that diocesan 10%. It's an end to the diocese. Everything, and they do. What they did was they took the 5 years before, what percentage that was, often. And it's interesting that, whenever the bishop reported it to the bishop's conference, Bishop McCormick, propagating the faith. He said, we're really in for trouble now. Wichita's going to fall away altogether. Last year, the Wichita Diocese per capita were second in the United States giving to the propagation of the faith. In case you wonder what diocese was first, St. Louis. So, Bishop McCormick's a complete convert now. Because some of these collections yo-yo in different dioceses, you know, in your own parish, you know. Ours always goes up, at least by the cost of living. Generally more, but at least by the cost of living. Yeah. That's decided by the diocese, yeah. No. Yeah. The parish? No. The parish, all the parish surplus money goes to the diocese. And then they in turn loan it out to parishes that are building. Yes. Yeah. I limit everything like that to 500,000. I don't believe they should have any more. Keep a lot of things going elsewhere. It's very easy to get tied in, you know, that the church is just my parish. That if, like, the whole diocese is the church is the whole diocese, the church is universal. Church. You need to get all tied in. And I think, you know, the diocese have been doing better. If you notice this year, the Vatican's even the black. So, Cardinal that went over there must be doing something. Yeah. No. No. Nope. Yeah. Yeah, we have a few parishes that die that have over 1 million. I've been after the bishops to get rid of it. But he says, well, it's up to the pastor and the pastoral council. That's the way he wants it to go, you know? Yeah. Oh yeah, oh, there's parishes throughout this country. I was talking to a priest in Philadelphia there at one of the meetings recently, and they have over 2 million in there. Probably not, like, you know, I don't know. Different areas would be different areas, you know. But you've got to rely a lot on faith. Yeah, that's an ongoing thing, you know. Not the way we all operate parishes on faith. Drop. Yeah, skills different, yeah. But, you know, we draw up a budget. And it's just a faith commitment that the people are going to donate that year. Hmm? That's all it is. We're talking about business people, like they're going to sell this much goods this year in order to get their income, like, but we're operating completely on a faith commitment. It's really interesting if you think about it. But it's the goodwill of the people. Interesting, the Catholic population, of course, is increasing quite a bit. What are we up to now, 60 million? Going on up, and what I think we don't realize is, you know, that the Catholic population in this country per capita are better off financially than any other religion in this country. What a strange thing. There's a lot of it contributed to the school. Advantages to that, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Our finance committee sends out letters every so often. Just acknowledging, thank you for the contribution. No. Yeah. No. Because that's continued. I started, this is the third parish I started it in. It's already continuing in the other two. They were in a smaller scale then, because we're smaller parts. One which is brand new. Yeah. Have I transferred them? No. Yeah. The only recommendation I have for bishops anymore, like, you know, is that our bishop started and said every parish has to do it. I recommend the bishops anymore not to do that. I just recommend to them to invite the pastors who want to do it, to do it. And the others, after a while, will do it then, whenever they see it work. Because it's completely invitation. The bishops like to get everybody involved in a particular process. But, I mean, it's amazing the number of things that our diocese has been able to do because of this. So they don't borrow money anymore at all for buildings throughout the diocese or anything else like that. Yes, there's several up on the spot. It's like that. There's all types of mothers' groups and all types of small little communities. We have, you know, they meet quite regularly. Yeah. Some parishes have divided up into areas, the larger areas, the larger parishes, the small groups, to help one another in the community, which I think is a good idea, too. We don't have it ourselves. But I think what they call the neighborhood apostle, if you're living or not. But we're going to get those people together in that neighborhood, like, you know. But it seems to work pretty good in various areas. We'll have Bible study and prayer and occasionally maybe a mass in that area and things like that. But anything that'll form community is going to help today. That is a big thing. Farms community will help. Okay, anything else? Yeah, it's Sunday collecting. So, what's interesting was they got an option whenever we spread it throughout the diocese of doing what we did with regard to schools. But that wasn't really part of the whole idea of stewardship at all. And, but we had been doing it at, from ever I started it at St. Francis. So, in the parish, in the city, for example, there was 8 schools in the parishes. And, 4 of them immediately went for our particular program, paying completely for the elementary school and for the high school students. And what was interesting about that was 2 of the wealthier parishes did, and 2 of the poorer parishes. Now, there was also 4 parishes in between that said, well, we'll go for our own school, the elementary school, we'll do away with it there, but we're not going to pay for the high school. Now, those 4 parishes, for the first 5 or 6 years, really struggled. And they have switched over to the other way now, altogether. They struggled. Because one of the things that you realize in percentage giving, that if they know they're not going to be asked for some more money for different things, they're going to give their full percentage. But if they think they're going to be nickel and dime to death, well, then they're going to hold back.